Tonight's 40-minute speaker is Pat from Carlsbad. Welcome, Pat.
Hi, my name is Pat, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Karen, for asking me to come up here. Thank you, Mike, for coming with me, and Peggy, my dear friend, for coming up here with me. I love it when we go away to a meeting and we get to share on the way up and we'll get to share on the way back. And she just told me a real funny story, and you know, I just love it. Let's see. Let me start with my sobriety date. My sobriety date is July 5th, 1978, and I was blessed with coming to this program, and I didn't have to go back out there. And I really believe my sobriety is a gift from God, and my gift back to God is taking care of my sobriety. I have that sobriety date. I have a sponsor, Pat J., and right now she's in the hospital, so we have prayers for her. I have a home group, and my home group is the Wednesday afternoon handbag meeting, and that's about 70 women, you know, and that's been going on for a long time, since before I got here. So I'm grateful for those three things that I have. When I was born and raised in Philadelphia and New Jersey. Philadelphia in the wintertime and the Jersey Shores in the summertime. So in the wintertime, everything was pretty straight-laced, you know, and we went to school and we did like we were supposed to. My parents, I came from an Irish Catholic family. My last name is O'Halloran. So we were very Irish, and we had a good time. When in the wintertime, my parents would hang out in the kitchen, and they'd sing Irish songs, and they played a fiddle, and they had a flute, and they had a banjo. Can you imagine those three together? But it was pretty cool. They would sing, and you know, and that's how I would go to sleep a lot of times, listening to that. So, and then in the summertime, we would go down, which we call here the beach, we called the shore, which was our summer home, and that was a bar on every corner, and bands in every bar, and it was fun, and it was exciting as a kid to hear all this, you know, and to see all this partying all the time. So I equated alcohol with a lot of drinking, you know, and I did see the other side of the street, you know, of the fighting and the carrying on that went on with it, you know. And I have two older brothers and I have two younger sisters. And my two older brothers and I were kind of raised together, and then my sister and I, there's 11 years difference. So I was the baby for 11 years and the only girl in the family. And my brothers are these real big Irish guys. You know, my one brother's 6'6". And this big, you know, and and we're only 15 months apart. So we're called the Irish twins, he and I, and we were like that. We were just all the time together. And he was just a hellion, you know, and I was this little angel baby that didn't do much of anything but tag along with him and laugh a lot, you know, and so these boys would always say, "Don't be drinking like these other girls. Don't you be doing that. You look at what these other girls are doing." So I didn't drink, you know, because of my brothers, really. I was about 11 years old, and we went to a wedding in Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, you had, like, the Polish section, the Italian section, the Irish people, the Jewish people, the German people, da-da-da-da-da, all around like that. So, and like in squares, more or less. So I went to this Polish wedding, and they were doing the polka, and they had this punch, and I was drinking it, not knowing it was spiked, and I got loaded, you know. And my brothers just flipped out, you know, took me home, and they said, "No more of that," you know. And I, so, oh, okay, you know, but I'll never forget that, you know, like, whoa, I could really dance. And so that stopped. So instead of drinking all those years, my husband, we got married very young, and I had two children very young, And my husband went to college, and it was imperative that he went to college, you know, for me and for what I wanted in our lives and what he wanted. So we worked really hard to get him through college, and he brought those funny cigarettes home, you know, that we all smoked. And I had never been exposed to that. So, wow, I didn't have to drink, you know. Everybody else drank, and I just smoked, you know, and kept it like that for a lot of years. And what happened for me is that I started drinking after my divorce. We got divorced, and I started drinking, and I started going out to bars, and I had never been. So it was a whole new life for me out there. It was like, oh, my God, just like when I was 11, you know, and I drank. Well, it started and I was a grown-up, and I could do what I wanted, and I had enough to do what I wanted and how I wanted to do it and go where I wanted to go, and it was like freedom. And it worked, and I had fun for a while. Not for long, but I had fun for a while. And then all of a sudden, I have to tell you, alcohol divorced me like that. Now, I'm going to skip forward a lot of years. I was in New Jersey, and I knew I had to get... I lived on an island. I moved down to the shore area, and I lived on an island. And on this island, everyone knew each other in the wintertime. You know, the winter people. The summer people would come, and they'd all go home. We were real glad when they went home, and we had the island to ourselves again. So there was a lot of boating and a lot of yachting, and I lived right on the water. And I was in my friend's yacht, and this painter, Joe, which everybody knows Joe, and that's a winter person, he's painting. And it was lunchtime, and I said, hey, Joe, you want a beer? And Joe said, no, I don't drink. And I said, oh, Joe, you must be sick. Because I didn't know anybody that didn't drink. And he said, no, I'm not sick. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, what's that? He said, that's where you belong. And I said, wow. Well, it was like Joe stabbed me right in the heart, and I go, wow. So I said, well, what is it? And he said, it's a program that helps you stop drinking. So I thought, wow. And he told me where the meetings were on the island, and I went down there one day. And I went up there, and I put my hand on the doorknob, and it was like, oh, my God, I hope nobody sees me. You know, now they could all see me loading and carrying on, but don't see me going to AA, you know. So it was like a hot potato, man. I got away from that thing. And to make a long story short, I said, I have to get off this island. I have to go somewhere. And one of my older brothers, he was making a film in London. And I called him up, and I said, you know, Jack, I'm moving to California. He said, what, are you crazy? I said, yes. So I sold everything I had, and I said, where shall I go? He said, go to Del Mar. He said, you'll fit in there. Go to in good schools for the kids, yada, yada. I said, okay, I'm going to Del Mar. I sold everything I had. I got a U-Haul. And I had a new car, and I had the U-Haul put on the car, and I didn't know how to back that thing up. It would fishtail all over the place. So I had to make sure I could drive it and pull right out, you know, of wherever I was going. Now, on my trip, I joined AAA, not AA. I joined AAA, and they gave me this map thing that I had, you know, and I said to my kids, and they were young. They were like 12 and 13. I said, listen, we're going on an adventure. Well, I took them on an adventure, all right. So we had this flip map, and we're going through, you know, across the country. And I didn't know there were so damn many mountains I had to drive over, but I got here. And we got into New Mexico, and my son said to me, I kept a bottle of scotch available for me at night. Because, God, I needed a drink after, you know, the drive all day. He said to me, Mom, your scotch is getting a little low. And I said, oh. how dense am I? Oh, it is? Yeah, I had better buy another bottle. So I guess I bought us another bottle. You know, they were drink a little bit of my scotch with me at night, and I didn't know it. So anyway, these kids came with me across the country, and we got here, and I was working down in Delmore, and I have to tell you what, all of a sudden, like I said, alcohol divorced me. It stopped working. I mean, just like that. I was physically sick. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I thought I had a moral issue going on here. I honestly didn't know. I thought I was nuts. I thought, oh, my God, what is happening to me? And in a blackout, well, let me back up. It was the 4th of July, and I had friends in from Philadelphia, and we had been partying all week, and I never made it to the fireworks that night, that 4th of July, because I went home, and I was just sleeping it off. And I woke up about 9 o'clock, and I missed the fireworks, and I got dressed, and I went back down to the bar, because that's what we do, and I said, I'm going to have just coffee. So I had coffee to start off with, and I said, go ahead, you can put a little shot in that coffee, you know. And of course they did, you know, and then we all went out to breakfast, and I never really got loaded that night. But what happened for me was, and if you're new, I hope you hear this, because what happened for me was, my ace in the hole was, I could always die. If things got so bad, I could just die. And that night, I couldn't die, and I could no longer live the way I was living. And this fear came over me that was overwhelming, a fear that I had never experienced in my life. And when this fear came over, I came out of my blackout and experienced it. Because what was happening to me, I was going in and out of blackouts and was overcome with fear. Went back into a blackout and came out again, and I'm calling Alcoholics Anonymous. They had just opened up in North County, their office. And this man answered the phone, and he said, I'm going to have a woman call you back in about 10 minutes. And I thought, oh, for sure. And this woman called me back. And she said the magic words for me. She said to me, I know how you feel. And that was the first time in my life that an adult ever said to me, I know how you feel. And I knew she was telling me the truth. That communication from one alcoholic to another is so strong that I believed her. And she said, can we come and take you to a meeting? I'm going to have another girl call you. And I said, okay. So this other woman called, and by this time, now I'm a little bit better. And she said, will you go to a meeting with me? I said, why, certainly, but I'll meet you out in the driveway. My thought was, I don't want an alcoholic in my house. Right? And you guys wouldn't remember these commercials. But there used to be a commercial that came on. If you have a drinking problem, call da-da-da-da-da. And my kids would say to me, hey, Mom. And I'd go, oh, turn that thing off, you know. So anyway, here I am. I don't want an alcoholic in my house. So she came to pick me up. And what an experience. Here's a woman my age, in a little yellow Mustang, and I walk out there, and I looked at her, and I said, are you the alcoholic? And she looked at me, and she said, better still, honey, are you the alcoholic? And I went, woo! And she said, get in the car. And I did it. I got in the car, and we drove up to Oceanside to the Alano Club, and they just opened the Alano Club for daytime meetings. Now, remember, this is 32 years ago, and we didn't have a lot of daytime meetings, so we had to either go to Pacific Beach or Oceanside. So we went to the new place, which is Oceanside, and they have these great big doors. And I stood there. I swear to God, I couldn't move. It was like I was glued to the sidewalk. And she put her hand right in the middle of my back and gave me a big shove. And I stumbled right into AA, you know. I said, holy God. You know, and they put a cup of coffee down in front of me, and they said, here's a cup of coffee. And by this time, I needed a drink so bad I could not pick it up. I was shaking so bad. And then, during this meeting, they were arguing and fighting at who didn't bring the cake the night before. I didn't know what they were talking about. And I said, this is like home, you know. This is good. This is all right. These people are okay. They're not paying attention to me at all. Thank you, God. You know, and after the meeting, you know, they got up and they said the Lord's Prayer. Now, I told you I was Irish Catholic. I was raised by the nuns. I went to parochial school, girls' school. And I could tell you that prayer backwards just about. And it was the very first time I heard that the Lord's Prayer that it pertained to me. That it, you know, I just got ears to hear it differently. And then after the meeting, they told me, they said, buy a big book. I said, okay. And then she said to me, write something in the front of that book. Put your name and a little message to God. They didn't mess around. Do you believe in God? You do it. So I did. And I put, dear Lord, please don't let me forget this day for the rest of my life. And I never, ever want to forget it. This is where I sometimes cry. So I don't want to forget that day. I don't want to go back there ever. So what they taught me is to live in my here and now. And how do I live in my here and now? I didn't know. So what my sponsor told me, oh, I got to tell you about her. Her name was Janie, and she moved down from Newport Beach to Del Mar, and she didn't have any projects going on, and she said I was it. I was her project, and she was a big book thumper. And she said to me, you're going to learn to live in your here and now, and you're going to learn to live differently through these steps. And I didn't know how to do that. So she took me to the 11-step prayer, the St. Francis prayer. And she said, every day, just live one of these lines. Try the best of your ability, and you just keep on doing it over and over again, and don't tell anybody that you're doing it. That's the secret. And she said, the biggest secret is that we have here is no matter what happens, you don't drink. And that's my message to the newcomer. No matter what happens in life, we just don't drink. And stay, and we learn to live in our here and now, because for me, my here and now is where my God is. I put a little red dot on my watch, which is nail polish, not a jewel. And every time I look at that little red dot, I know it's God's time and not my time. Because when I got here, I had the case of big dealism. Everything was a big deal. Everything in my life was a big deal. And I had to stop that. And I had to learn to live differently. Now, when I got here, I told you I had those two kids. And those two kids were just raising hell, having a good old time. Mom's going to meetings, and they're partying in my house. I come home from the meetings, and they were like cockroaches. You know, when you turn the light on, the cockroaches all go away? Well, that's the way these kids were. Boom, I'd open the front door, they'd be going out the back. And I'd say, what's going on here? Oh, nothing, Mom, you know? And I'd, oh, dear Lord. You know, but no matter what happened, I didn't drink and I didn't use, no matter what happened. And my first year was horrendous. All the things that happened to me. My daughter was in a car accident out in Rancho Santa Fe, and Rancho Santa Fe is all these windy, dark roads, and I couldn't find my way when they called her, and one boy was killed, and she had she was in the emergency room, and she was dying, and she was just out of that body, and her spleen was ruptured, and it was like, and her lung was ruptured, and I just said, oh, God, please don't let her die, you know. And then all of a sudden she popped back into that body, and, you know, and just was carrying on, and I knew she was back, but I didn't drink, and I didn't use during that. And you guys carried me through that. That was a real difficult time because I was a single mom and I was out here. And my brothers were off somewhere, and here I am. But you carried me through that time and taught me how to walk like I talked. You taught me not to drink no matter what happened. And I was working down at the bar when I was new. Oh, I forgot to tell you that. I was a barmaid, so I had to quit my bartending job, my sponsor said, and get a real job. So I said, okay. So I was willing to do anything I was told to do, and I got this job out at La Costa Spa as a PR lady, which was really good because I got to use the facility of the spa, and I had to use my brain. And with this job, I had to remember people's names. If they came in, they were introduced to me. If they came back a month later, I had to remember their name. That's part of the deal. And I know how to do that. So to make a long story short, I'm working out in La Costa, and I'm sort of broke. And my family cut me off completely. Thank you, God. Best thing they ever did for me. And so here I am. I'm really trying. I'm trying really hard. They repoed my car because I didn't make the car payments. So I had to take a bus. I never took a bus. I didn't know how to take a bus. And I had to learn to take a bus to La Costa, this big fancy job I had. And they'd say, "Where's your car?" And I'd say, "Oh, it's in the shop." Well, you know, finally they stopped asking me where my car was, you know. And one day I was in the spa, and the gals were at lunch at the desk, and I took care of the desk that day for that hour or so. And this man came in, and he was going down to the men's spa, and he needed a safety deposit box, and I got him one out. And he was down there maybe for 10, 15 minutes, and he came back, and he gave me the key, and I gave him the box back. And he went out the door, and then I turned the box upside down. And when I turned the box upside down, there was just a big wad of hundreds. And I go, ooh, he won't miss a couple of these. I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief. I will steal the eyeballs out of your head if I could, and get away with it. And here I'm thinking, I could use just a couple of these. Just a couple. You know, it would just put me right back to paying the phone bill, and, you know, I wouldn't take too much. And then I thought, oh, no. If I take this, I'm going to get drunk because that's my old behavior. So it was like I came to a crossroad in my sobriety. I was given a choice. And the choice was, do I go my old way or do I go this new way? And the old way would get me drunk, and the new way I knew I wouldn't. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go try this. So I call him up and I said, "Hey, you left a little something down here." And I laughed. And he said, "I'll be right there. Oh, my God," you know. So he came back down and he went like this. "This is for you, honey, for being honest." And he gave me more than I would have stolen, trust me. But what it gave me was the privilege of knowing that I have a choice. I can go either way. I do have a choice. And if I want to live a decent life and I want to stay sober, I better make the right choice because I do have the answers within. Now, I told you about that car they repoed. So they repoed that car. I'm taking the bus. I'm being good. I'm trying to do everything I'm supposed to do. I have these wild kids that I'm trying to tame down, and teenagers now, and just I'm being good. And I don't think I should have all this happening to me. And my sponsor would laugh at me. She'd say, "Honey, it's the wreckage of your past coming and biting you." And I said, "Oh, okay, well, I hope it stops real soon because it's getting pretty tough out here." And every morning I would walk down to that bus and I'd pass all these beautiful homes and all these things these ladies have. And my heart would be sick. And then at night, I'd have to walk all the way back up that hill, and they'd be having dinner and in their beautiful homes. And I'm thinking, what did I do here? What happened for me was, I complained so much to Janie about the car and walking up and down that hill. She said to me, I had enough. She said, I want you to write God a letter about the car. I said, okay, I'll do that. So I wrote, Dear God, I want a new car. I don't want a car payment. I don't want the maintenance, nor the insurance. I can afford the gas. And I signed it, and I dated it. And I said, now, Janie, what do you want me to do with this? She said, put it in your wallet. And every time you think about that car, you think about that letter in your wallet that you have to God. Well, let me tell you, folks, I thought about that car all the time. I was obsessed with the car. And so every time I thought about it, I thought about the letter I wrote to God. Well, La Casa goes on strike. This is so crazy. The Teamsters own it now, and we're all Teamsters, and we go on strike. So they said to me, you got to go out on strike. I said, oh, my God, you know, I've got to support my family here. And when you're out on strike, you can't do that. And they said, got to go. I said, all right. So I went out on strike, and I went to a meeting that night, and we all went to coffee afterwards. So at coffee, I made the announcement. I need a job. I can, you know, so this guy, Steve O, says to me, can you sell? I said, yeah, I can sell. He said, okay. He said, well, come on up. He said, I'll get you an interview at the car lot. I said, okay. So I put my little polka dot dress on and my high heels, and up I go. And I walk into the car lot, and the owner, his name is Bob, he looks at me, and I said, I'm Pat. And he grabs his heart. And I said, what's the matter? And he said, I've had this business for 20 years, and I've never hired a woman for this position. And I thought, well, I am a woman. And he said, well, I said, well, at least give me the interview. I made it here. So I gave him my resume, and he gave me an interview, and I used the how. I told him, honestly, I didn't know how to sell cars. I was open to learn, and I was willing to show up every day. So I went through the interview. We chatted for a while, and then Steve gave me a ride home. And I got home, and I figured, well, you know, that's the end of that. They're not going to hire a woman, you know. It's just the way it was back then. So he called me a few hours later, and he said, you know, I checked out your interview. I checked out your resume, he said, and they told me I'd be a fool not to hire you. So go over to DMV and see Tom, and he'll give you your salesman's license. And you can, and back then, you could do that in a day. And they fingerprinted me and did all that. He said, then come to work tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Oh, my God. So I did all that. I got a ride over to DMV. I did all that stuff he told me to do. And I show up 2 o'clock in my suit now and my high heels, and I'm ready to go to work. And I walk in there, and these guys absolutely hate me. Absolutely don't want me there. They hate me. And the vibes are coming off of them, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, you know. So they put me in the back in an office. They said, here's your office. Here's a contract if you ever get one. You know, this is where the keys are and the tags are if you ever get, you know. So they gave me all this literature to read, and I read all the literature, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, oh, dear God in heaven, what's going on? All of a sudden, the door flings open, and they said, you have an up. I go, what is an up? And that means you go sell a car to this person. And I said, oh, okay. So now I have to walk past all these guys. And I started, that same fear came over me that I had that night where I got really scared. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm not going to be able to do this. My knees were shaking, and I was shaking all over. So Janie said to me, when that happened, to me to reach down and grab God by the hand, and he would walk me through anything. So I reached down and I grabbed God by the hand, and we walked past all those guys out to the very end of the lot where this young guy was. He was my age. And I looked at him and I said, "You want to drive this car?" He said, "Yeah, I do." So I said, "Let me go get the keys and the tags." So I went back, and now I'm brave. I went back and I got the keys and the tags, and I kind of looked at them. And I went back out and I said to him, "Do you know how to put these tags on?" He said, "Yes." So he did it. I said, "Do you know how to drive this car?" He said, "Yes." So I gave him the keys and off we went. And I told him my dilemma. I told him it was my first day and how the men hated me and I knew nothing about the car. and I didn't know how to drive the car. It was a stick on the floor, and I learned a stick on the column. So I'm scared to death. I can't even tell you, you know, and I'm not crying to him, but I'm telling him. He said, "All right." He said, "We're going to take care of this." He said, "I'm going to teach you how to drive this car, and we're going to go through this whole car, and I'm going to teach you about this car before you go back to that lot." And this guy did. He showed me everything about this car, and it was a Fiat. A Fiat Spider. So here I am, and he's showing me everything about this little car, and he taught me how to drive it, and we were gone for about 2 hours. And they didn't know whether I stole the car or what we were doing. But I was gone for a long time. So I come back, and I said to him, "Are you going to buy the car?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Are you going to buy it tonight?" He said, "Yes." Ooh. Back into the office we go, and I write it all up, and then I go into my boss, and I'm negotiating the deal for him, and that I can do. I'm pretty sharp at that. I'm negotiating, and we sell the car. Now, I did tell my boss during this negotiating time and why I was gone for 2 hours, And I told him I didn't know how to drive that stick, but I just learned, you know. And he wasn't too impressed with that one, but he was impressed with what I was doing. And anyway, I sold the car that night. And then at the end of the night, we had to go around and lock up all the cars. And the guys are being nice to me now. They're all being nice. And the boss comes around at the end of the night, and he said to me, "I've had this business for 20 years, and no one has ever sold a car on their first day. And you have." He said, "So therefore, you will work for me. You've got the job." He said, and "I give benefits." And he was like a peacock. He was a very proud man. And he said, "I give benefits." I said, "What are the benefits?" He said, "You get a demo." I said, "What is a demo?" "I don't know." And he said, "It's a brand new car." And I said, "Do I make the car payments?" He said, "No." I said, "Do I make the insurance payments?" He said, "No." I said, "What about the maintenance?" He said, "You bring it up here every Friday, and we take care of it. We even wash it." I said, "Oh, what about the gas?" And he said, "The first tank is on me, but you've got to put the gas in." And I went, and he said, "Oh, and this is the only new automatic I have on my lot." He said, "Get used to the cars." I said, "Oh, thank you." I couldn't believe it. I got in that car. I'm driving home. We didn't have cell phones back then. I get to my house. It has a garage, which is empty. I open the garage door, put this new car in there. I call these kids out, and I go, "Come here. I'm going to show you how it works. You know, come on. You know, you do the right thing. You see what happens, you know." So the kids are all out in the garage, and we're going through the new car, and blah, 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 blah. And I go in, and I call Janie, because I always called her before I went to bed. I called Janie. I said, "Janie, you won't believe what happened. I had my letter out." So I read her the letter again, and she kind of laughed, and I told her the story, and she laughed. She said, "Well, what do you think that is? I said, well, I think it's a miracle. And she goes, really? And when she did the really thing, that's when I sat up and I listened. And I said, what, Janie? She said, honey, do you come to believe that a power greater than yourself is taking care of every minute detail in your life? Everything. Do you come to believe that? And I had to say yes, because I was doubtful of that. See, I could see how God would be taking care of you and doing for you, but not me. And now I know without a shadow of a doubt that my God is taking care of every minute detail of my life. No matter how far away I think I may be or how close I think I may be to Him, I'm being taken care of if I do the right thing. And for me, the right thing is I don't drink and I don't use no matter what. And she told me the first step before the first step is conceding to my innermost self that I'm a real alcoholic. And once I concede to my innermost self that I am a real alcoholic and know that from the core of my being, that I never have to betray myself again and drink. Because all those years, I thought everyone was betraying me. And it was me that I was betraying through my drinking and my using and my alcoholism. And I really didn't know the difference. Now I have this car, I have this job, I'm doing good, you know, and I have these kids, and my boy was 16, and so I'm a couple years down the road in recovery, and my boy is 16, and one night he came running home, and it was like he had the wolves at his feet, you know? You know how you have the wolves at your feet? Everybody's after you, more or less, you know? And he comes running in the door, and out of breath. I go, what's the matter with you? And he's totally loaded, totally stoned, and I looked at this boy, and I said, I can't watch this. I can't watch this happen. I can't participate in this. So we watched over him that night. And back then, there was no place for young people to detox. I knew the guy down in San Diego, because here I am. I'm active in the program. When I came in here, I didn't stay on the fringes of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got right in the middle. And I got into service with H&I. And I got active. I got a commitment at a few different meetings. So I'm in service and I'm active. And here I have this boy that's having difficulty. So I call Maurice down at 11th Street, 11th and Island in San Diego. It's the detox center. I said, Maurice, what do I do? This boy he's got a detox. He said, you're going to have to detox him at home. And I'm going to tell you how. And, you know, I could call Maurice at any time during that night when I was so scared for that boy. And we detoxed him at home. And I don't do that by myself. I call somebody else in to help me. And we detoxed that boy at home. And the next morning, I said to him, I invited him into my bedroom. And my children, I always invited into my bedroom. They were not allowed in there unless they were invited. And usually that was they were in trouble when they got invited in there. So I invited him into my room, and I said, and I closed the door behind us. And I'll never forget that. I sat down, and he sat down, and I looked across the room at him, and I said, I can't do this. I can't watch you die. I won't participate in this. And I meant that from the bottom of my soul. I said, you can either go to a meeting with me and get into recovery, or you can go live with your father. But that's the two choices you have. So he looked at me and he said, I'll go to a meeting with you, Mom. So we went down to the six-step house. And the six-step house came about because there was a bunch of us that were crying. We needed the six-step house. We needed some place to go. that we didn't have to go to Oceanside or PB. So they opened up that little recovery house down there. And here I am, I'm taking my boy there. And I thought it was the most god-awfulest meeting I had ever been to. I thought, oh my God, this kid is not going to hear anything. But there was a group in from New York, young people. And they were down at the beach. And they were having, they were playing volleyball or whatever. And I knew it after the meeting. So after the meeting, I took him to the young people. And I said, here's a newcomer. And I said to him, what do you think about that meeting? And he said to me, I'm coming back there. And he has stayed sober since that day. That is a miracle. That is a total miracle. That meant that that boy was raised by the men in Alcoholics Anonymous and the principals. And that meant that he didn't have to go through the grips of despair of alcoholism. It doesn't matter what age you get here. We have that incomprehensible demoralization that we go through. And it doesn't have an age on it. We can just do it. And we know that we have the disease of alcoholism and we can do something about it. What they told me is it's not a disgrace that I'm an alcoholic. It's a disgrace to know I'm an alcoholic and not do anything about it. Now, I told you I went to H&I. And I went to the woman's prison up in Rainbow for years. And I was the coordinator for that meeting for years. And there was times that I would go up to that meeting, like Christmas. I had a big, beautiful home with the Christmas tree that, you know, up to the ceiling. Looked like something off of a card. And I'd leave my family and they'd say, where are you going? I'd say, I'm going up the hill. Because nobody would go up on Christmas. So I'd go up the hill and I'd take a meeting in there and I'd come out of that meeting and let me tell you what, I floated off that hill back down to my family. I was so grateful that I was a sober woman and not a sober woman in jail because it could have been me any time. So I did all this H&I work and I never had gone to jail. I didn't know what it was like. But for years, I did H&I up there with these women, and they taught me so much. And then my daughter got into trouble. And when my daughter got into trouble, I knew how to handle it because I had done that H&I work. And when that judge called and said, can she come home to your house if we give her probation? I said yes, because I knew what to do from going to that jail and not being a parent that it was a revolving door for these kids going in and out. What an incredible gift. My daughter came home for 2 years and lived at home with her three kids. That was a trying time. And I had to walk like I talked and I had to give unconditional love. But most of all, what I had to give was respect. I had to respect her, and I had to give her dignity, and I had to do that because that's what you gave me, was dignity. And I was able to give that back to my own child, and today she's a clean and sober woman for 18 years almost. Next month she'll have 18 years. That is amazing, because this girl was in deep trouble. But she knew where to come to, you know, and she knows that the love that we have in our heart. I have to tell you one more story. This is a good one. When I was new and before I even, when I was out at La Costa working, I lived in this condo down in Del Mar. And this gal, Carol, used to come to the door every morning and she was in the program and she would help me. And she'd knock on the door and I would open the door and I'd say, get in here, Carol. I got this dog I'm not supposed to have. You know, and she would laugh and she'd say, okay. And we'd write letters to the landlord, that I wouldn't get evicted. And we'd write letters to whoever we needed to. And she helped me straighten out my financial affairs. She helped me every morning. And she came for coffee every morning for I don't know how long. Come to find out, later on in my sobriety, Carol owned the whole complex. Yeah. So we're writing letters to her employees, you know. And we're going through all the stuff. But she gave me that dignity. And when I found that out, I said, Carol, you never told me. She said, honey, I couldn't. She said, you just passed that on to another woman. And I got to pass that on to my own daughter and to many other women. I sponsor lots of women. I have step studies in my house for years. And I'm so grateful that I have learned the principles of these steps to utilize in my everyday life. And that I have the life that I have today. Because today I can go anywhere in the world and there's an AA meeting. I can go anywhere in the world and I can feel at home, just like I do here. It's an incredible gift that we have. It's like a secret society, you know. And here we are, one alcoholic talking to another, knowing that there's hope. There's hope with this disease, but first of all, we have to admit it to our innermost self. And for this night, I thank you, because I get to 12-step me. I hope somebody heard something, but I got healed, and I want to thank you again.